Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
It's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going
to
find one.
Are you confused with the ups and downs in the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stocks.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome again to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. I'm Peter Schiff. I'm the host for the next hour, the president of Euro Pacific Capital. I do this show live every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. The show can also be heard on shortwave radio at 5.07 megahertz and on my website at www.europac.net. If you ever miss the live show on shortwave and you want to hear it at another time, or you have some friends you want to listen to it, the rebroadcast is every Saturday evening at 11:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific, on shortwave 9.32 megahertz, or on my website on the archived version of radio programs. All the shows that I ever do are stored there in MP3 format. People can download them and listen to them when they have a chance. Anyway, again, this is a call-in program. The number to call toll-free is 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. The lines are open. I am looking forward to your calls, either calls from current clients who wish to say hello, who have any questions about their account or just about my outlook on anything, or any potential clients who are still on the fence that have some questions, or if anybody just wants to take issue with anything I say or that I have said. I'm interested in those calls as well. So again, the lines are open, and give me a call. It is 888-678-9597. Now, I hope everybody enjoyed last week's show. I was at the San Francisco Money Show and had a chance to meet a few of the clients who came to our client-only event. I must say, though, I was disappointed in the San Francisco Money Show. It seemed like there weren't as many people there. And certainly my second workshop, which I've had 300 to 400 people at, even at that show last year, there were only about 30 or 40 people, I think, there. So I don't know if it was just I had a very bad time slot or if it was a bad, just the show in general. But I have some other live appearances scheduled. Not this weekend, but the following weekend, I will be out in Phoenix. I have two conferences or two that I'm speaking at. One of them is the Freedom Summit on November 3rd, and the other one is Financial Fest on November 4th. Financial Fest, I think, is a bigger one that's kind of open to the public. It's free to go to. The Freedom Summit, I'm not exactly sure the details there, but the links are on my website. So if you're in the Phoenix Scottsdale area, or even if you're not, but you feel like making a trip, take a look at those two events. They're happening on November 3rd and 4th in Phoenix. And anyway, and then the following weekend, I am at the Western Regional Mortgage Brokers Conference in Las Vegas. I think you've got to be a member to go to that conference, but if anybody happens to be in Vegas and they want to look me up, I think it is at, it's either the Bellagio or the Mirage. I forget which one it is. But I'll be there, I think, for 4 or 5 days. I'm not speaking until the Monday, November, I think it's 13th is when I'm speaking. And then November 15th through the 19th, I will be in New Orleans for the New Orleans Investment Conference, which, again, I strongly recommend that if you're in that area or if you've never been to New Orleans and you want to come down there, register for that conference. I know it costs $500 or $600. That one's, there's a price to go there. But it's a great conference. A lot of good people are there. It's been going on for a long time. It's kind of like, an icon down there in New Orleans. Of course, it used to be run by Jim Blanchard, who's no longer with us. But it's a good place to be, and I'll be there. So if you, you know, want to have a chance to say hello or meet, you know, a couple of the brokers, I forget who's coming down there, but a couple of the brokers from the Darien office will be there. You know, also, we're starting to build up that California office. So you'll start, if you're calling the Newport Beach office, there's a couple of new guys there now who are starting. So we're starting to build up that office. If you remember, you know, when I first moved out to the East Coast, when I was headquartered out in Newport Beach, I had an office out there. And when I moved out here, you know, a few months after I got here, a few of the guys that worked in the Newport Beach office took off, tried to do their own thing. You know, in any event, so the office went down to just a few people. And now it's building back up. So there's actually quite a few good, competent brokers that were hiring in the West Coast. I was focusing more on my East Coast office. And John Catalfio, who did the show here last week, did a really good job of building up the office in Phoenix. So we've got a lot of good, talented brokers in the Phoenix office. And you know, now you know, the Newport Beach office is building back up. And, of course, we've always have run the Perth Mint program from the Newport Beach office. And, you know, gold is starting to perk up. It was up $5 or $6 today. It's still below 600. It's about 590. But it really looks like it's ready to take off. I mean, any day I expect to see gold up $20 or $30. It's a great time to buy. Some of the gold stocks have already started leading the way up. The last two or three days, I've seen a tremendous amount of strength in the gold stocks, particularly Newmont Mining, which had really been lagging, you know. And I think the fact that Newmont is now really breaking out and outperforming could be an indicator that the mining sector has turned. Not only is Newmont outperforming the XAU and the Huey, but the XAU and Huey are outperforming bullion. And, you know, that hadn't been the case. So it seems like there's some strength. And, of course, the base metals have been on fire. I mean, look at what's happened to zinc, lead, nickel. I mean, these commodities have gone through the roof. And they're probably leading the way. And I think gold and silver are going to follow. Silver is basically right under $12 right now again. And it looks to me like it's moving higher. So I definitely recommend, you know, we've been buying this one stock in Australia, a major producer of zinc and lead, and this thing has been on fire. We have a great yield too. A lot of our clients bought it a few months ago and they're doing really well. I mean, you know, these are the types of ideas that we've got at Euro Pacific Capital. So if you're not a client or you're our client, you should talk to us about the way to play these industrial metals, these, you know, nickel, zinc, lead, copper, because there's some great companies with great dividends that you can buy overseas. For physical, for the precious metals, gold and silver, there are plenty of good quality mining companies here in the U.S. That we can introduce you to, or foreign companies that trade here. But for physical precious metals, I still prefer the Perth Mint for gold, silver, or platinum. And, you know, gold's up another $4 tonight. So, you know, between tonight and today, that's $9. So we're moving. And the number to call for the Perth Mint program, it's in the California office. And the number there is 800-993-8350, 800-993-8350. If you've been on the fence on gold or silver, I suggest you get off that fence quickly before these prices move higher. They really look solid to me, and I think we've really built a good base here, and I think the sentiment has turned. We've turned a lot of people very negative, not only on gold, but on oil. You know, oil was up over $2 a barrel today. Oil is back up, you know, over $61 a barrel. Natural gas prices were up about 12% today. We're back in the mid-7s. You know, we're almost at $8 again. And it wasn't too long ago that we were close to $4. So that's almost double in natural gas prices. I think that we can move back up to $10 to $12 relatively quickly in natural gas. You know, we're coming into the winter. And, you know, we get back up to $12 from $4. We get a tripling in natural gas prices. I think once crude prices get back above 65, 66, you know, the next stop will be back into the 70s. And it's amazing. You know, I watch the television on, you know, and there's still everybody is talking about the drop in gas prices and falling gas prices and how this is going to boost the economy because the consumer is going to benefit from cheap gasoline prices. I mean, people, I don't know what they're smoking. But, you know, you have this drop from 78 down to 58, and all of a sudden everybody's talking cheap gas. I mean, gas isn't cheap. I don't know what people are looking at. I don't know why people think the consumer is going to get a big boost because gasoline is all the way down to $61. I mean, $61 is still pretty expensive. It's a lot more than people were paying for gasoline last year or the year before. I mean, you know, the pump prices aren't cheap. In fact, the only reason that people were able to handle, $60 gasoline in the first place, $60 oil in the first place, was because of all the equity they had in their homes, and they could borrow money to pay for gasoline. But that's going to change. You know, we got the home sales figures again. Real estate sales dropped again. Prices were down year over year again. This is the first monthly, back-to-back monthly decline, I think, since 1980 or something, or 90, in real estate prices. But, you know, wouldn't you know it, the National Association of Realtors is out proclaiming a bottom. They're saying, this is great news, sales are down again, that must mean the market has bottomed out, and it's going to be a buyer's market again, or a seller's market again. I mean, this is just nonsense. I mean, nothing has happened. How can they claim a bottom? You know, that'd be like, you know, in the NASDAQ, you know, the NASDAQ was at 5,000, then all of a sudden it goes down to 4,700, and Merrill Lynch comes out and says, it's a bottom. Great. This is great news. Now we can have it. Now we can launch a brand new bull market. We bear market is over. We've dropped from 5,000 to 4,700, clearly a bottom. You know, I mean, this is ridiculous that these realtors think there's a bottom. You know, one of the things they happen to be pointing to is the fact that for the last 2 months, inventories have been flat. You know, inventories haven't been growing. And they're saying, see, this is a sign that supply and demand are coming into balance. You know, this ain't a sign of anything. I think what's happening is that a lot of people who put their houses on the market are delisting them. I think their agents are basically telling them, look, your house has been on the market for 4 or 5 months. It hasn't sold. Now we're coming into the winter. It's a slow season. Don't leave your house on the market for another 6 months. It's not going to sell. Then when the spring comes along, who's going to want to buy a house that's been on the market for a year? People are going to think there's something wrong with it. You're desperate to sell. They real estate agents are probably telling their clients, look, take it off the market. You know, it's not going to sell anyway during the winter, so just take it off the market. Next spring, we'll put it back on the market as a new listing. You'll be in better shape. I think that's happening all over the place, and that's why I think the inventories are falling. Not because people are buying these homes, but because the sellers are taking houses off the market that didn't sell. And also, I think there probably are some people that were interested in selling because they thought they can get a certain price, and when they realized that they couldn't get that price, they took their house off the market and said, well, you know, I wanted to sell my house for $1 million, but if it's really only worth $800,000, what the hell, I mean, I'll stay here. So that might be happening, you know. But I don't think it's anything to get excited about. And I think that come next springtime, March or April, I think you're going to see new all-time record highs. I mean, right now it's like a 7-point-something month supply of houses. I think that by next year, summertime, by, you know, midsummer, you're going to have, you know, 10 months to a year, maybe more, housing supply. I mean, it's going to be an all-time record high. There'll be nothing like it. And so, I mean, all these National Association of Realtors, I mean, these guys aren't unbiased economists. These guys are worse than the Wall Street brokerage firms. Their economists are even more biased than Wall Street's economists. It's just amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Anyway, we've got our first call. But before I take it, let me just repeat the phone number in case anybody else wants to call. You know, it's better to call. Sometimes we get a lot of calls bunching up towards the end of the hour, and then I gotta dispose of everybody pretty quickly. So if you're thinking about calling, call early. You know, it's a toll-free number, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Although if you're a client of ours, you shouldn't really care because we're making you so much money. I guess that the cost of a phone call shouldn't bother you. Anyway, let's go to the phones. I got Andy calling from Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Andy.
How you doing, Peter?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, I just wanted to say I'm fairly a long-time listener, first-time caller. I heard you talking a little bit about housing, and I really want to get some thoughts on that from you. Plus, I was more interested in hearing your take on the TIC numbers that were released last week. I saw we had a $116 billion appetite for U.S. long-term debt, and I'd really like to hear what you think about that whole thing and how that's going to play into the bubble economy.
Well, I mean, it's already a big factor. Obviously, the appetite for U.S. debt by foreigners, mainly foreign governments, that's the real demand it's coming from, is the key to the whole thing. I mean, that's the air in the bubble. I mean, without that, it couldn't exist. So we need foreigners buying our bonds because American citizens don't have the money to buy them. We don't have any savings.
Right, right. Now what?
Or the money that we're spending it on stocks and real estate. We don't have the money for bonds. So, you know, whenever our government runs a deficit, the only way it can do it is if it's funded from abroad.
Right, it's just
that's what's so terrible about the deficit, even, is that, you know, we can't finance it ourselves.
Right.
We have to go with a hat in hand over to China, over to Japan, because that's where the savings are. And they have to fund our deficits.
Yeah, but this just seems like a huge number. I mean, we were talking, you know, the last couple months, $30 billion, 32. I think one was about, you know, somewhere in the mid-70s. Then it went back down into the low 30s, and everybody said, uh-oh, you know, the demand for these things is drying up. People, you know, these guys are, you know, wising up a little bit, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we throw a record trade deficit, and they just come right in there and bail us out. I just can't understand how they can't see this. It just makes no sense to me.
Yeah, well, again, you know, sometimes, you know, there's that book, you know, Popular Delusions, The Madness of Crowds, and right now there is a fallacy that has gained acceptance in academia and on Wall Street and all around the world, that American consumption and American demand is somehow the key to global prosperity. And so, therefore, our trading partners feel that they need to do this. I mean, we've got them conned into thinking that their livelihood, their economies, are tied to our consumption. And obviously, if the dollar collapses, we can't afford to consume, so they feel that they have to prop it up. And again, what they think, and so many people don't understand this, that if they let the dollar collapse, they won't need our consumption because their own people will be rich enough to afford it themselves. Because when the dollar goes down, their currency goes up. And all of a sudden, see, the reason they want us to buy their products is because their own citizens can't afford them. But if they let the dollar collapse, their own currencies will rise. All of a sudden, their citizens will be a lot richer. They would now have the purchasing power that they were trying to preserve in America. It's just all nonsense.
Yeah, it's totally upside down. And kind of tied into that, I just actually finished reading your dad's book. I'm a client of yours, and the broker I deal with Ed, and he was telling me about your dad's book, so I went out and got a copy, and I just finished reading it, and he was saying that, you know, the same one.
Did you read The Biggest Con?
Yeah, The Biggest Con, and he was saying the same types of things back in the 70s when these problems were so much smaller. What blew my mind is, like, all right, how did this go 30 years? And we still, I mean, we've had some issues, certainly, you know.
Well, remember, we didn't escape this scot-free. My dad wrote that book in the early 70s, and during the mid to late 70s, the dollar did lose two-thirds of its value. When my dad wrote that book, gold was $100 an ounce, and it went up to $850. So, you know, when my dad wrote that book, very few women were in the workforce. Now, almost every woman is in the workforce.
Yeah, you're right. We have called a lot of labor off the bench, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, what we've done in order to, we took a big lowering in our standard of living, but of course what we did is we blew all of our savings and we went deeply into debt. So that's another thing that we did to keep this whole illusion going, is people went, so, you know, we blew our savings and we borrowed and borrowed and borrowed. So we threw our women into the labor force, and we borrowed all of our, you know, we blew all our retirement savings. And we went into hock. So we were able to maintain this illusion of prosperity, but now the problems are so much worse than they were when my father wrote about them in the early 70s.
Yeah, our back's up against the wall now.
Yeah, there's no way out of it. And now, you know, when people, I have these arguments on radio or television, and people are thinking, well, we've got all these years. People were talking about the problems 20 years ago and nothing happened. Well, something did happen. Instead of fixing them, we let them get worse. And the fact that we've been, foreigners have supported us during this journey, doesn't change the fact that it's a disaster. But now there's nothing out. There's nothing we can do. We don't have any more rabbits to pull out of the hat. You know, we can't send our children into the labor force. And we can't borrow anymore. I mean, we're borrowed to the max. Our savings rate is already negative. I mean, there's nothing more we could do.
I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm a teacher. I teach high school. And a lot of my students actually are now, you know, coming in and saying, you know, that they're having to take jobs to help support the family. You know, so we are at the point where we have to do that.
But they're not going to, what are they going to do? I mean, going to get a paper? I mean, how much money can he make? It ain't going to do it.
Exactly, not much. You know, they don't.
I mean, unless they're just going to drop out of elementary school and work full time. But work full time doing what? What are they going to do? It's not like there's any. It's not like we can. You can put them in a factory to do. You know, in some. Because there's no factory. I mean, what's an unskilled 12-year-old going to do? That's going to earn any money?
Or even an 18-year-old, as most of these guys are. They're still not going to do anything.
Yeah. What are they going to be employed doing? So we can't do it. I mean, even if we were going to do that to our children, they don't have the skills to earn enough money to make any difference.
Yeah, I wanted to get your take on that because I've been having this discussion with a few of my colleagues and trying to get them to understand, you know, why they have to, you know, do some of the things that you're suggesting and get out of dollars and basically.
And now you're a long-time listener to the show. Are you a client?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, great.
I haven't been a client as long as I've been a listener, but I started buying gold quite a bit before I became a client, so I'm not a total loss. But I've been trying to explain to some of these colleagues of mine, you know, how you know we've gotten here and what's happened, and they throw the same argument that I just threw at you, and that's why I did it, because I asked them, you know, to take a listen tonight and, you know, and hear what you had to say about that. Because I think it's very important that everybody or as many
people need to do. They need to go to my website, read my stuff, get my book. My book's going to be out in February. And, you know, on my website, it's not up there now, but, you know, probably by next week, don't go to Amazon. Wait till it's on my website. But I think a week from now, by next week, you'll be able to go on my website and order a copy of my book. But my book really is going to, it does a really good job of explaining in very simple, easy to understand terms, how we got into this mess and why we are in such a mess and then, you know, what you can do about it to protect yourself. I mean, it doesn't really say what the country could do because there's nothing the country could do. The country's screwed.
Right.
But individually, we can do something.
Yeah, and I've told people that, too. You know, this is one of those things where, you know, you don't have to just throw your hands up and say, well, I guess I just have to deal with it. Well, no, you don't. There's actually things you can do to avoid this mess to at least some degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people just, you know, they're in the submission mentality, I guess.
We gotta help educate them and then get them in the right investments, at least preserve their wealth. That's the key, because the people that don't understand this and don't do something about it are going to be broke. I mean, people are going to see their home equity evaporate, or if it doesn't evaporate, it's going to be worthless, because, as I said, it doesn't matter if you live in a $1 million house if you've got $10,000 worth of food in your refrigerator. Now, the house isn't worth much if that's how much it costs you to eat.
Right, yeah. People don't understand relative terms. They understand dollar terms. That's it. They don't.
If they don't learn it through us, through me or you, and do something about it, they don't learn it the easy way. They're going to learn it painfully the hard way.
Oh, and that's exactly what I've been telling them.
Oh, hey, Andy, thanks for the call and appreciate your business. And we'll keep putting good stuff on the website and hopefully we can convince some of your friends.
Well, that would be definitely a good thing. I appreciate you taking the call.
Okay. Hey, we'll take a quick commercial break. I know I've got a caller hanging on. I will take that call as soon as we finish this commercial.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we're back. Let me give out the number again to call toll-free. The number is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. The lines are open, and let me take a call from Joe in my state of Connecticut. Go ahead, Joe.
Peter, how you doing tonight?
Okay.
Good. I'm a first-time caller, and I'm not a client, and I'm thinking about investing in gold. Can you tell me, I'm reading that this is not insured. Can you tell me how safe it is?
Not insured. You mean the Perth Mint?
Yeah, the Perth Mint. Yeah.
The Perthman is not insured by the FDIC, which is the government organization that insures brokerage accounts.
Okay.
And I think that insurance is pretty much meaningless, but in any event, the Perthman is not an FDIC-insured vehicle because it's in Australia. But when you own gold, I don't think you need any insurance. The only insurance you need when you own gold is what if it gets stolen? You know, gold's gold. I mean, gold's not going anywhere, and so what you need to make sure is that no one steals your gold. And the beauty of the Perth Mint program is your gold is stored in a government-owned mint in their own vaults. And the government of Western Australia, which is a province in Australia, which is the equivalent of like the state of California, although it has a better credit rating than the state of California, they guarantee, they say that this gold is there, that if anybody steals it, we'll make good. So you've got a government promising, based on their ability to tax their citizens, that they're storing, they're keeping your gold safe.
Yep.
If anything happens to it, they got you covered. Then they've reinsured it through Lloyd's of London. So Lloyd's in London is basically going to say, look, if the Australian government doesn't make good on its promise to make sure your gold is there when you need it, we'll do it. We'll stand up. So you've got, you know, a sovereign government, and then you've got a huge insurance company basically telling you that your gold is safe. Now, that doesn't mean you're insured against market loss. I mean, you can buy gold at 600 and it can go to 300 and then you've lost half your dollars. I mean, it doesn't insure against that. What we're insuring against is that your gold is there. But I think this is one of the safest ways of buying gold. I think it's a lot safer than you buying it and burying it in your backyard or even putting it in the safety deposit box here in an American bank. I think it's a lot safer out of the country.
Okay. Now, you mentioned other metals. Are you more favorable on gold as opposed to silver and nickel?
I like them both. You know, I like gold, you know, for its monetary function. Silver, I just think, is going to go up with gold, maybe even faster. But I like all the metals. As I said, I like the industrial metals, too. I mean, I like commodities in general. I think that they're going up. I like real things. I like stuff. You know, we're in a highly inflationary environment, and that's what you want to be in. You know, during the 1980s, when it was a financial, all the inflation, we still had inflation, but the inflation was manifesting itself in the financial markets in rising asset prices like stocks and bonds and things like that. So that's where you wanted to be. That's all changed, and now the money is moving into real stuff. I mean, don't be fooled by the new high in the Dow. The Dow's at 12,000. So what? The Dow was at 11,800 6 years ago. Big deal, it's up 200 or 300 points. You know how much inflation we've had? You know how much commodity prices have risen in the last 6 or 7 years? You know how much the price of everything else has gone up? I mean, the Dow is still losing value. You know, don't be fooled by the media telling you that we're at a new high. We're nowhere near a new high. A new high is miles from here.
Okay, in terms of gold, it's somewhere around 590.
Yeah, gold's around 590 right now.
Yeah. Do you have any predictions of where that's going?
Yeah, a lot higher.
A lot higher.
Yeah, and so I would just be buying it. I think this is a great time to buy it right here. You know, you can call up my California office, talk to Danny Dwyer or whoever else is there, and get yourself an account set up and buy the gold before it goes even higher.
Okay. Okay, I'll stay in touch for your website.
Yeah, and I'll give out the number again, the number for the Perth Mint. I mean, if we can, any of my offices, if you're working with one of the brokers in Connecticut or, you know, they can buy it for you. The only place we can't sell it is from Phoenix. And nobody in Arizona can buy it. I mean, it's a screwed-up rule by the government of Arizona.
Hmm.
If you live in Arizona, you can't buy the Perth Mint.
Hmm.
But you're in Connecticut, you're fine.
Okay.
And the number is 800-993-8350. 800-993-8350.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Look forward to working with you as a client, both in gold and hopefully in securities as well.
Okay. Good night. Yep. Bye.
Again, yeah, the telephone number, the telephone lines are open. The number to call is 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Well, today we heard from the Federal Reserve, and basically they left interest rates unchanged again. I think it's the third month in a row where the pause has been on. They still have the same guy, Dissent. There's one guy, I forget his name. one lone guy with a little bit of integrity who's opted for a quarter point hike the last three times. Now, I was curious, I mean, because he's still only opting for, I guess, a quarter point. He should want three quarters of a point now, unless he just wanted one more quarter point and then nothing else. So I don't really know what he's saying, but the government is still trying to paint a rosy picture on the economy, trying to, you know, put forth this Goldilocks, you know, just right, not too hot, not too cold, everything is great. I think it's just smoke and mirrors. They're trying to pretend inflation really isn't a threat, but again, they want to pretend that they're ready, they're vigilant, and that if it looks like it's picking up, that they're going to stomp it out at its first sign, which of course is nonsense. But they have to maintain that illusion. And I also think they're glossing over, you know, the weakness in the economy, the weakness in the housing market. They're trying to say that it's not that big a deal, and you know, it really is. And so I think these statements are more propaganda than anything else, and the Fed is very concerned about the message it sends, particularly to the international community and our foreign creditors. And so they want to make sure that the message is, don't worry, everything is great, U.S. economy is in good shape, inflation is under control, keep buying our bonds, keep loaning us money, you know, everything is great. But of course, everything isn't great. You know, even today, you know, the markets didn't pay attention to the $2 move up in crude oil prices, you know, the move up in gold. You know, the dollar was marginally weaker. I mean, it was down. I mean, it wasn't down. It wasn't killed. But it was a pretty solid down day against the euro today. And, you know, they're not paying attention to that. But I think by the end of this year, we're really going to see a lot of selling pressure coming into the dollar. I mean, I think, you know, at the end of the year, you know, November, December, and beginning of the first quarter next year, I think it's really got to start weighing on the markets. Because, you know, if you look at all the other foreign central banks, the Asian, European central banks, they're all talking a lot tougher than the Fed. They've obviously got more rate hikes coming. You know, New Zealand today, people were expecting a rate hike, and they didn't hike. And so the New Zealand dollar down about 1% from where it was yesterday. And the Australians, though, they're talking about a hike. But mostly throughout Europe and throughout Asia, the central banks are talking about hiking. We know that most people think the next move in the U.S. isn't going to be a rate cut. So people are looking for rate cuts here, higher interest rates abroad. That's negative for the dollar. And when people start to appreciate the severity of the coming economic slowdown, you know, I mean, I saw a guy on CNBC the other day, you know, interesting guy because he was looking at the automobile sector. And he was talking about, you know, auto sales year on year are down about 4%. And he basically said that every single recession that we've ever had in this country, there's been a decline in auto sales. And he also said that we've never had a decline in auto sales without there being a recession. And every time there's been a decline in auto sales, there's been a recession. So it seems like it would be unprecedented if the U.S. economy wasn't heading in recession, given the decline we're seeing in auto sales. And I think it's obvious we're going to be in a recession. It's not only auto sales, but home sales. They're both going down, and those were the cylinders that kept the bubble economy going. Those were the two big-ticket sales items. Everybody was buying cars. Everybody was buying houses. And that's what kept people employed. That's what kept the credit going. And obviously, that's changing. Anyway, we've got another caller on the line. I've got Harry from Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Harry.
Yeah, hi, Peter. I'm a client, of course, and I have a question. I don't know if it's appropriate to ask you this over the air. I'm thinking of getting into selling securities.
You know, as a profession?
Yes. I invest with your company, and is there a unique talent that you look for in a broker?
Well, what makes a good broker, obviously, is somebody who's a good salesman, somebody that can communicate effectively, and have somebody, you know, get enthusiastic or communicate an idea, but then turn that into actually a customer or a transaction. I mean, a lot of people are fence sitters, and so a lot of clients, you know, sometimes have difficulty in making a decision. A lot of people tend to remain, you know, inertia seems to be a natural reaction. People just don't want to commit, make a decision. And what makes a good broker or a good salesman is somebody that can really help somebody make that decision and end the procrastination. So that's, you know, good salesman and being articulate, you know, and to work for me, the key is, you know, I mean, I'm coming up with a lot of the ideas myself, and, you know, and so, you don't have to necessarily be a great stock picker because we're doing that. You just have to be able to communicate my ideas to my clients. Now, in general, what makes a good stockbroker, if you're working, you know, at another firm and you know, you've got to come up with your own ideas, because in general, the ideas you're going to get from the mainstream firms aren't any good. And a lot of times, they're biased anyway. A lot of times, you know, the stocks that big Wall Street firms are recommending, they're not recommending them because they're good investments for the clients. They're recommending them because that's what they need to attract investment banking business, or they're trying to sell something that they're trying to get rid of, that they have an inventory of. So it's very difficult to do well for your clients when you're working for a major Wall Street firm. Now, you can go work for yourself at a small firm. But again, then, you know, if you're going to be on your own, you're going to have to also have some knowledge in investing and how to, you know, how to tell, you know, when it would a good investment from a poor one.
Now, what's it require, taking a securities exam?
There are some larger firms that will hire you.
Okay.
Without a license and sponsor you, but you do need a Series 7 license to sell securities.
Uh-huh. Well, I believe in your...
Everybody at Euro Pacific has a Series 7.
Uh-huh. So it's just a matter of taking that exam and then approaching a firm that you agree with their philosophy, which I agree with your philosophy.
Yeah, well, my philosophy is unique, so you're not going to find many firms that have my philosophy. So if you're trying to invest like me, I mean, I might be one of the only firms that you can work for. I don't have an office in Pennsylvania, though, so you might have to move here to Connecticut.
Well, I was thinking about maybe working out of my home.
Yeah, well, it's kind of difficult to get started that way because you're all isolated. But
I live in a very rural area of the state.
Yeah.
Uh huh. So, does it require people coming into the office, or is it most of the work?
For supervising, I don't want to really get into that. You should call me off the air because I don't want to.
Hey, sure. That's my problem.
Are you working now?
No, I'm not. I have worked for a long time. Basically, I'm a care provider for somebody who had a stroke. But my background is in social work.
Well, it's a big switch, but I mean,
yeah,
this is all I've ever done. You know, I've always been a broker.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing it for, you know, since I got out of college.
I believe in your philosophy. Of course, I'm a client, and I have a good diversification of investments that I have with your firm, and I'm very pleased. You know, because I believe that the United
States... You're interested in pursuing it as a profession, so I guess that's good.
I'm exploring the possibility.
All right, hey, thanks for the call, and I look forward to doing some more business with you, and who knows?
Thanks a lot.
Okay,
bye.
Call on here. Yeah, you know, we are hiring, too. I'm always expanding. You know, we've got people, we're hiring in California, in Connecticut, maybe even in Phoenix. So if any of you are in those areas and you think... you know, this is the type of job you'd like to have, basically helping to communicate these ideas and these principles to more people in such a way that they actually do something about it. You know, that's the key. I mean, I talk to people all the time, and you know, a lot of people talk to their people about these problems. But just talking about them really accomplishes nothing because we're not changing anything. So the key is not to just talk to people, but actually get them to do something, actually get them to act to preserve their wealth so that they don't go broke. Now, as I said, it'd be nice if we can help the whole country, but that ain't happening. It's impossible. There's no way we can help the country. In fact, these problems are unavoidable. As I said, the country is already, we've already screwed ourselves, right? You know, we're going to have to pay the piper. Now, there are certain, obviously, there are things that can be done so that the pain is a little bit less, you know, not as bad. And there are certainly things that the government can do to make it easier for the economy to rebuild, right? But, of course, they're probably not going to do those things. In fact, based on the current mentality of our government, our elected officials, the U.S. government is likely to make things worse. Unfortunately, that's going to be the case. The policies and the programs and the regulations and the taxes that are likely to follow this major economic collapse that's coming are likely to make it even worse and likely to ensure that the malaise lasts a lot longer, or depression, whatever you want to call it, but it's going to last a lot longer and be a lot more severe as a result of government actions that are likely to take place. Now, if there's any way I can influence those actions, that would be great. If we can influence what the government does in the aftermath. You know, as I said, there's nothing that can be done to avoid the collapse. Now, I certainly think that if we, if we can allow the collapse to happen now, that would be preferable to happening in the future, but not preferable from the standpoint of the politicians. For the politicians, a disaster is always better if it happens after the next election, even if it means it's 10 times worse. Because for them, there's nothing worse than losing the election. That's their world. So whatever bad things have to happen to the economy, let them happen as long as it means I get reelected. That's how a politician thinks. You know, it's not, oh, let me do this. This will be great for the country, but it's going to cost me my job. Uh-uh. It ain't going to happen. Not in America. Anyway, let's take another quick message. The lines are open. Let me give you the phone number to call, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. We'll be back for your calls if there are any more after the break.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, I am back for the last segment. We've got about 20 more minutes left. If you have any calls, call me now. The number is 888-678-9597. That's 888-678-9597. There are currently no calls on hold, so if you have a question or a comment, you'll get right in. Anyway, on Friday, we've got the jobs report coming out. It's probably the biggest economic release of the week. Remember, last month, the jobs report was terrible. It came out, I think it was like 55,000 jobs were created. It was less than half of what Wall Street was looking for. But the market didn't seem to care. I think the market was up. I know they had revised the previous month up somewhat, so that maybe took the sting out of it. But the key was the direction, that we went down to a month where we only added 55,000 jobs. I'm sure all those jobs were the ones the government just made up out of thin air. You know, even the Bush administration, was it a month ago or so, all of a sudden discovered hundreds of thousands of jobs, maybe 700,000 new jobs that were created that they forgot to report. You know, all this good news comes out, you know, right near the election. But I mean, a lot of these numbers, you know, the government has this birth-death assumption. Every month they just assume a certain number of new businesses were created, even though they have no factual evidence that they were created. And then they assume that those new businesses must have hired people, so they just make up some number for the birth-death. I mean, it's always, they always assume businesses were created. They never assume that they were destroyed. I don't know, a lot of businesses fail. You know, why don't they assume that happened? But they always assume that businesses were created and that those businesses created jobs, which is two assumptions, because maybe a business was created, but how do you know there were any jobs associated with it? I mean, the whole thing is nonsense. But, you know, the numbers for the past 2 years or so have constantly, with a few exceptions here and there, have been under what Wall Street's been looking for. They constantly look for a lot of jobs to be created, and they're always disappointed, but somehow it never seems to sink in. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we had another weak number. The only thing is, you know, this is the last jobs number before the election. So if the Bush administration has any political influence over this number, this would be the time they'd want to utilize it, right? They don't want the last jobs report before the elections to be a weak one that the Democrats can use to talk about, see, the thing is slowing down. They want a really good, strong number that they can talk about. I don't know that they actually have the ability to influence it, but there are a lot of people who think they do. And if they certainly have that ability, then now would be the time to use it, you know, with the elections coming up. And so they want to try to get some positive headlines. So that, you know, that might be. And if that's the case, then, you know, maybe we won't have a terrible jobs number. But my guess is it should be another weak one. I don't know if it'll be as weak as last month's, which was so weak. And I also wonder, you know, are they going to revise last month's up? You know, who knows? We'll have to see what happens on that. But that number's coming out Friday. And it could influence the markets. But I'd like to see if we can follow through on these movements up in commodities, in oil, in gold in particular, and in the gold stocks. You know, certainly if we get a very weak number in non-farm payrolls and the dollar reacts to it the way it should, by going down. I mean, it's been ignoring. We had a record trade deficit this last month, you know, $69.9 billion. We've had all kinds of weak economic news last week. You know, Philadelphia Fed was very weak. You know, the data keeps getting weaker and weaker and weaker. I mean, data that a few years ago, the day that kind of data came out, the dollar would have been clobbered. But for some reason, the dollar's taking all this stuff in stride. And so we'll see what happens. But if it does come under some pressure with a weak jobs report, that could be enough catalyst to really send the metals prices up and the gold stocks with them. So we'll have to see. It could be a very interesting day on Friday. But anyway, what else is going on? I try to remember. You know, what else has been the news? I was out last week at that money show. The housing numbers I already talked about. If anybody can think of anything that I haven't mentioned that happened that you want me to comment on, now would be a good time to call because the lines are open. I'll give out the number again. It's 888-678-9597. 888-678-9597. I know on the election, I mean, people ask me, you know, what I think, you know, how I think the election is going to impact the economy, the markets, the dollar, what we're doing. And, you know, to be honest, I really don't have a clue. You know, I mean, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing if the Republicans hold the Congress or not. You know, I mean, I used to would have said, of course, you know, it would be a good thing. But, you know, I mean, the Republican Congress has done so many bad things. That, you know, it's hard to believe the Democrats would be that much worse. I mean, they might be, but, it's not like there's a big contrast. I know that, you know, when you have divided government, when you have, you know, the Democrats in the Congress or the Republicans in the White House, that less gets done. And basically, whenever the government does something, they do something bad. So when it comes to government, the less they do, the better. I mean, you know, whenever they're not in session is when we're the safest, is when these guys are at work. So to the extent that we've got this divided government where they're opposing one another, if it means that there's stalemate gridlock, that's the best thing that the U.S. economy can have, I guess, is gridlock because nothing gets done. And, of course, whatever gets done is likely to make things worse, so we don't want anything to get done. Now, I mean, there's a lot of good things that could get done, such as dismantling government programs and reducing government spending and lowering taxes, but that doesn't seem to happen, even when the Republicans control both houses of Congress and the White House, they're not cutting any programs at all. In fact, I think in this last budget, I mean, Bush has increased education and health care spending dramatically. Dramatically. This is the national debt has increased $3 trillion under his presidency. You know, it's now $8.5 trillion, but it's up like, you know, $3 trillion from, it's up over 50% since he's been president. Meaning that means that under the George Bush presidency, the national debt has increased by more than it increased under all the presidents before him. I mean, that's a massive, you know, it's kind of crazy, too, that he takes credit for reducing the deficit when you look at these kind of abysmal numbers. So, I don't know what the markets are looking for, you know, who they want to win. I mean, Personally, I mean, I still don't know. I mean, I think that if the Republicans keep the House and keep the Senate, there's a good chance that the tax cuts might be made permanent before this session. And, I mean, I personally want to see that happen because I got a lot of capital gains, and I haven't taken them yet. And I think that over the next few years, I'm going to have enormous, even millions and millions more in capital gains. And, of course, I'd want to pay a lower tax on those capital gains. And a lot of my clients have and will have enormous capital gains. So I'd like to see the capital gains and the dividend taxes stay low, just because that's going to help us out on that end. And so I think if the Republicans are in, there's a chance that'll happen. If the Democrats take the Congress, there's no chance that's going to happen. Now, I don't think they're going to be able, you know, to get rid of the tax cuts, you know, earlier than when they're set to expire, because I guess Bush would veto that. So it would mean that we'd have another couple of years of these tax cuts, but then there would certainly be a tax hike very quickly in the next administration. Now, I think that if the tax cuts are made permanent, it'll be a little harder for the next administration that comes after to raise taxes. Now, it's my bet, though, unfortunately, that if the Republicans manage to hang on to the House and the Senate, which looks like a long shot, but if they do, I think it's going to come back and bite them in the you-know-what next time around, because I think that we will be in a severe recession 2 years from this election. And whoever's in office might have to worry. And so we could end up with the Democrats sweeping back in, taking both houses of Congress and taking the presidency all in one sweep, because basically everybody's going to want to vote out the incumbents when there's a mess. And unfortunately, we only have two viable parties. I mean, no one's voting for the Libertarians. If you can't vote Republican, you vote Democrat. And so, unfortunately, throwing out the Republicans means putting in the Democrats, and people don't realize that they're just, you know, substituting a greater evil for a lesser evil. But that could really be a real disaster. Anyway, I got a call on hold. This will be the last call of the night because it's getting late. I got Bob calling from California. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Hey.
My question is has to do with specifically uranium and what's been happening the last few days in uranium. And if you feel like it's good for a long term, or if there's going to be a pullback, or what's your feelings on uranium right now?
We've been bullish. I've been bullish on uranium for several years. Once I learned the story a few years ago, the dynamics of supply and demand and what was going on with uranium and the growth of nuclear power and the shortage of physical uranium, I mean, I was hooked on the story. And, more people are finding out about it. But, you know, I expect the uranium prices to continue to move up. I mean, that's my feel.
Okay.
And, you know, most of the uranium investments that we've made in mining companies, I still consider to be speculative because I haven't found the uranium company that has a good dividend. Most of them have no dividends, but they've been going up. But if you want to speculate, you know, you're looking to speculate on something, meaning you want to buy something and just bet that it goes up, as opposed to an investment, which is mainly what we encourage people to do, which is an investment. An investment pays a good dividend. Capital gains are the icing, but it's not the cake. It's, you know, we get that, hopefully, in addition to the dividends we earn, regardless of what happens. But if you're looking to speculate, meaning buy something strictly because you think it's cheap and it's going to go up, and you're willing to take a risk, yeah, uranium is the way to go. I mean, it's one of the better speculations out there. And you can do that with uranium stocks, companies that have uranium deposits or that are exploring in areas that are known to have uranium. You know.
Okay, yeah, because we already own a couple of positions in SXR through, I work with Jeff down at Newport Beach, or up in Newport Beach, actually. And so I'm just kind of trying to decide whether we're going to add to that position or go back to natural gas stocks that you guys have up there and all that.
Well, they're all natural gas. See, there's more of an investment because you're getting very good current income from the natural gas trusts. And natural gas prices, like I said, are back, you know, closing on $8. And I think that we can move back up to $12 pretty quickly. This is the bottom here. And, you buy these stocks. You know, a lot of these stocks went down just a lot more than they really should have because of the number of leveraged speculators involved in these energy trusts. You know, I think a lot of hedge funds own them because these are great for hedge funds because they pay huge dividends. And the hedge funds can leverage them up and then have and then take 20% of the leveraged return from their clients because they get, you know, they get 2 and 20. So it's basically a license to steal money. When you have a hedge fund, you can throw it into an energy trust.
Yeah.
Have a downturn, and some of these guys have to move out. I mean, these prices drop very quickly, as people have seen.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, because we own both, well, actually a number of the companies that you have for natural gas and, you know, uranium, SXR and Vault and all those. And I'm just curious about what's happening, and I like them both, so... I guess you answered my question, though, and I try to refer as many people to you guys as possible because I think you guys are right on track.
Well, we've been on track for a while. I stay that way. Everybody else is off track.
Okay, thank you very much, Peter, and keep up the great work.
All right, well, thanks for the call. Yeah, everybody, it's important to bear in mind the distinction between investing and speculating. And, you know, most people who invest through typical Wall Street firms are speculating, and they don't even know it. They think they're investors. They fancy themselves investors. But what they're really doing is speculating. You know, and even their own brokers don't understand the difference. But when you buy something and you're expecting the price to rise, and your return is going to be a function of the price increasing and your ability to sell it at a higher price, that's a speculation. Because you don't know if that's actually going to happen. You're betting that the price goes up. It could just as easily go down. You don't know, right? So you're speculating on what happens to the price of that stock. That's very different than buying a stock with a 9% dividend, and you're buying it to capture that dividend, because that dividend is a known certainty. I mean, now there can be some variation in the dividend because the company's earnings could change. They can improve or they can go down. So the dividend could rise or fall, but at least the dividend is known. And you can look at the history of paying the dividend and try to determine how likely it is that that dividend is going to persist. And then you can invest to earn those returns, to capture those dividends. Whether the stock rises or falls in price is immaterial. I mean, sure, we hope the stock goes up, because then if we have to sell it, we can get a profit. But the way we're profiting is through collecting the dividend. Just like if you owned a business, if you owned a small business, right? You wouldn't be looking to sell it. Your profits are the income that the small business generates, whether you pay them out to yourself in a salary if you run it, or if it's just a company and you're a silent partner and you get a check or you get a dividend. Right? It's the same thing on a stock. You own part of a business. The return is supposed to be the income the business generates, not the fact that you might be able to sell the business at a profit one day. I mean, that might happen. But then even if you sell the business at a profit, what are you going to do with the money? Theoretically, you're going to invest it in something else. I mean, that's the beauty of our approach at Euro Pacific Capital, is we never have to sell our stocks. I mean, not unless something goes wrong, because the stocks are paying dividends. I tell clients sometimes, okay, sell this stock. Why? Because it went up. What are we going to do with the money? Buy another stock? You know, because we got to get the income, unless you're going to spend it. I mean, unless you're selling the stock because you want to buy a vacation house and you need the money. But if you're just going to turn around and invest in someplace else, I mean, that's the key. I mean, we want the income. We want to spend the income. We don't want to have to dip into the principal. So everything that we're doing at Euro Pacific Capital in general is investing. But sometimes, you know, we get excited about things like uranium and like other precious metals and things like that. We've encouraged clients who are interested in speculating to speculate. But we've got to make sure that they understand the difference between an investment and a speculation, and make sure the money that they put into a speculation is money that they can afford to lose, and it's not money that they can't afford to lose. You've got to know the difference. And that's why it's important to talk to the brokers at Euro Pacific Capital about your account and about your objectives, and so that, you know, we can know the customer and make the right recommendations. Anyway, we're running out of time. I thank everybody for listening. Make sure, again, to visit the website at www.europac.net. Sign up for the newsletter, The Global Investor. I know an issue is late. We're going to get it out soon. I already wrote my article. And buy the book, Crash Proof, and call us at 800-727-7922. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. So long.